Man. Op. Jongen, oh. jongen, dat snapt het toch wel.
Oké, okay. Nou ja, dan moet hij ons maar uitzetten.
Er zijn... Nog een keer. Er zijn hoeren in de tent.
Er zijn hoeren in de tent.
Er zijn hoeren in de tent.
Dus we gaan nog niet naar huis.
Hoeren. Eens kijken, even die jingletjes goed zetten
hoeren.
Natuurlijk, want anders krijgen we daar weer een zeik over.
Naar huis.
De huis. Die is goed, die is goed. Eeuw, hebben ze.
Straks
nog maar
wat
muziek
of zo.
Ja.
Stoppen!
Hey!
Ja.
Sponsored by... Ja, blind.de. Ja jongens, de feest was heel gezellig jongens, maar nu is het ook echt wel tijd om afscheid af te nemen. Dus doei.
Scheid
af te nemen. Brenno.
Ja, we gaan zo meteen het lekker hebben over het nieuws, als Xoppen zich helemaal heeft geïnstalleerd. De nieuws wrap-up voor zaterdag 13 augustus 2011. Het is een beetje chaotisch, want er staat een cameraploeg klaar om zo meteen te gaan filmen. Ik ga worden geïnterviewd tijdens mijn eigen show door niemand minder dan Birgitta Jonsdottir. Tenminste, dat is het plan, maar Birgitta is nog niet gesignaleerd. We zijn nog aan het installeren, want we moesten kennelijk een paar hoeren de tent uit. Dat is dan ook weer erg apart. Ik zie nu Psychic keihard gedag roepen, dus... Have a nice day en wij gaan even beginnen met wat muziek en heel snel orde op zaken stellen. Behind Your Back 92.6 FM. My name is Brenno de Winter and we are going to start. It is indeed that chaotic because Birgitta just had to run out to do a thingy wingy whatever. But I'm looking at Judith and you are making a documentary and now you are going to interview me.
Yes.
What is the documentary about?
The documentary is about IMI and the Icelandic Modern Media Initiative and Birgitta Jónsdóttir and the whole effort to make free speech more available and legal in a small country, a small island country, Iceland. I know that you were part of this original effort to move IMI along, and I just wanted to ask you about your experience with IMI.
A bit. I try to help out on the Freedom of Information Act part.
What role did you play in? Could you explain what freedom of information is?
Yeah, in many countries in the world, the notion has started that... the noise is terrible.
Yeah, I know. There's some rollicking going on outside the door here.
I guess yeah. The issue is that if you want to control your government and know what they're doing, you need to have access to all the original files, all the original documents, all the communications, and in order to totally understand what's going down. And the problem in the Netherlands, for instance, is that it's very hard to get access to these documents. There is a law called the Freedom of Information Act. In the Netherlands, it's called the Wet Openbaarheid van Bestuur, or WOP. And basically, that law is meant to give us that access to these documents. Now, in theory, we do have that right to access these documents, but it's anything but trivial. And I end up in court quite a bit trying to release those documents and often fail because of tricks that the government pulls to prevent you to get access to these documents.
So how did that lead you to Iceland and to Birgitta and to find... Have they been allies of yours or have you been allies of theirs or both?
No, I haven't been an ally in the past, but the thing was at a certain point through the hacker scene, I got in touch with her. And this was a very interesting initiative because there was a real reason to change the law. I mean, Iceland was in a financially bad place, having a lot of hardship, and they are trying to deal with that. And one of the big issues was that they didn't have access to the documents.
More rollicking.
Yes.
Frolicking. It's actually a float.
Whatever. Yeah. So Iceland really had a problem trying to get with transparency, and the transparency partially led to the financial meltdown. There was even a news show at a certain point, a news program that was not allowed to broadcast a news item. And that, of course, was outrageous and ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And there was fertile soil for change.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. How did you get involved? Were you invited or did you volunteer your services or your expertise to be part of that effort?
I was asked to have a look at the documents, the proposal, especially the FOIA part and the whistleblowing part.
And what did you where did it start? Where did you come in, and how far has it proceeded, and what period of time?
Oh gosh, I didn't keep track. I was there actually quite early already, and invited to have a look at documents. And it's been off and on, you know. At some month you put a couple of hours in. At some month it's like entire evenings. It depends. Sometimes people ask me to have a look at foreign laws and try to interpret that from my perspective, which is me as a journalist and a FOIA practitioner. And I'm not a legal expert. That's what you try to bring. And for instance, we're now very interested in the FOIA in Nigeria, where there are some very interesting rules that are very inspiring. For instance, in the Netherlands, they always say, like, you can't have the documents for this and this reason. And then they what they do is they stretch the boundaries all the time, and at a certain point you can't have hardly any document about certain cases. Now in Nigeria they say like you can't have these documents if they contain the following, and the reason for it is the following. So you never have a fight in court again about if does this fall under the law or not. I mean, it's kind of more black and white. And in the Netherlands, it's always the general interest versus the interest of not disclosing the documents, and that's a big that's a danger. Okay. And now we are trying to get that in the Icelandic law as well, in order to prevent the abuse.
So that is the way you would like it to be designed.
You know, so it hasn't balance. Passed parliament in Iceland yet. So yeah.
But what would the law look like that you would like to see passed in Iceland?
I would like the good thing about the Dutch law. Any document you have is basically the property of the people, and any document in theory is something we should be able to access, except certain limited exception grounds. Mm-hmm. And those, like in the Netherlands, now we have 14. If it were up to me, we would go back to 2 or 3. You know, the security of the state is a very clear reason. In criminal investigations, and I can value privacy. That's just about it, I guess.
You have 14 reasons for
not
what?
Not granting access.
I see. Uh-huh.
Disproportionate advantage is a very popular one that they use. Privacy they now use on each and every one. The freedom of a government worker to be able to express their opinion in private, and then all of a sudden all the documents are personal opinions and no longer government documents. But and that rule, for instance, was made to say like, okay, we're here in a working group. Shout whatever comes into your head, and then somebody can shout like, okay, let's reintroduce the capital punishment. And of course that is so extreme, but you can get the discussion started. For those reasons, it's that you can't say like, he said that we should have capital punishment again, because that's not the aim of such a conversation. That is why this ground was there. Now it's used for anything. I said privacy already, I believe. You can get business interests, which is also a very strange reason to do this. So you get a whole bunch of them, actually.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I guess the model I'm understanding of IMI is to make Iceland a model, to sort of perfect the model there and spread it. Is that how you see that as the way to do this?
Yes.
Worldwide, and could you talk a little about how has the Dutch model been duplicated elsewhere, or would you like it to be, or is that how you're why you're involved with Iceland?
The Netherlands used to be the absolute example on a lot of liberties, especially press freedom. And what you have seen consistently during the last couple of years is that we've been degraded to a very moderate average country that has only little press freedom. How do you say it? I'm struggling
limited,
with...
Limited your freedoms of
well, yeah, but
free speech?
We are not inspiring on other nations anymore as a free speech country.
Yeah.
What the opportunity in Iceland now is that here's a country that has experienced what the consequence can be if you're not open about things. They do want to make a change, and this model is very interesting, because now a group of people is seriously thinking, what do you really need to safeguard the most important freedom that we have? The freedom to gather news, and the freedom to be able to control democracy, and assuring that democracy happens. That if we can put that model in place and build an experience and a business case, that would be a very, very big step forward. hey, I think it's time for some music because I need some water. And refresh my throat. Yesterday I was complaining about the weather because it was too rainy, and now it's too sunny.
No, now we're hot. We were cold yesterday. Sorry, I wanted...
And you can listen to Binary Force at 92.6 FM on your decked phone by dialing 1926, and of course through our stream, which is at signal.hackerspaces.org. My name is Brenno de Winter, this is the news roundup, and I'm being interrogated by Judith about IMI, the Icelandic Modern Media Initiative, a set of laws that ultimately should guarantee freedom of speech and, more importantly, safeguard our democracy. You were asking me about can it be exported? The last part I forgot actually to answer was, of course, yes, this can be exported. This can be a base model that you can say, like, okay, this is what you want to put in the constitution. This is what we did wrong. These were the laws that were very inspiring. These are the reasons that we did things in a different way. So that all in all should help creating a kind of a toolkit. And that's now our focus point, I guess. Besides, of course, getting IMI to work in Iceland, because that still hasn't happened.
You were involved in the early days of IMI. Have you continued to be involved in advising them on issues of free speech? Could you talk about what you've done there, what you are doing?
I already told you about the fact that freedom of information, so the access to the documents. A second thing which is also very important is whistleblowing. And what you see now in a lot of countries is that there are acts that help whistleblowers. But the experience in the Netherlands, for instance, is always a very negative one. We've had cases of people going bankrupt, living in trailers for years before the government acknowledges that this is a whistleblower. I've recently seen a case where a whistleblower was caught and no longer anonymous. And then he lost his job over it because he complained to the wrong office. He had to go to a certain office, but he had to go to the main office of that. And he didn't. He went to his department and thought that he could notify people there. And for that reason, he ultimately lost his job, which is, of course, ridiculous. You know, these little errors are not somebody, a government worker who wants to do harm. Even more so, I have a lot of people leaking to me. I've never met a government worker that thinks he's cool by leaking. Most of the times, they are really unhappy, uncertain, haven't slept for days, and ultimately came to the assertion that there was no other option but to leak.
So what, how should we treat whistleblowers?
In my opinion, they're heroes. First of all, we need to find a way of finding out if whistleblowing is really necessary. But in many cases it is. And as soon as you have assessed that, they should be protected from being fired. If they are fired because you can't work, you need to make sure that they're financially okay. And treat them like that and not like criminals. I've had a couple of cases where people leaked to me and the police started investigating, so probably wiretapping my phone, etc. Well, what people did wasn't a crime. They gave information that people ought to know. And the mindset really needs to change. You know, all these things together, it's a mindset issue.
So how can we change the mindset of the world by changing the laws in Iceland? Or can we?
It's a very small step in a bigger process. The mindset in Iceland has been changed. That is the beginning. That makes Immi fertile soil for Immi. The mindset in the Netherlands is changing, but is changing slowly. So maybe we need to do a lot more before that in order to be able to change the law in the Netherlands. Right now, the political climate is not ideal for press freedom. I myself disclosed huge failings in a transportation card, and I am facing 6 years of imprisonment.
Well, so that's a serious issue that you're personally being confronted with. And was that as a journalist, not as as both a journalist and a whistleblower, would you say, in your case?
No, what I did, I traveled on hacked transportation cards to refute a whole bunch of claims of the company running it. And you have to imagine this company had, let me think, 3 billion euros spent of public money. And still we don't have a functioning card. It's insecure. And at a certain point, somebody needed to show that it was failing. So that somebody turned out to be me with a whole bunch of other journalists. But I've been singled out by the public prosecutor. And now they're going after me. They haven't decided whether or not to prosecute me yet. I've been interrogated by the police. But that in itself, of course, I'm doing my job. And you don't expect that your job enters your private life in such a way.
When do you expect? What do you think people at this chaos communication camp have to learn about these issues, or why should they particularly care about these issues?
Well, the hacker community has always been about freedoms and fundamental rights, and about having access to information. That's why you're among friends here. You know, as a journalist, this is the best place to be, because these people understand that you need to be able to do your job and you need access to documents. So that's one. Second, at this camp are the brightest minds in the world. And this community consists of very, very intelligent people that are extremely creative. It's a gift. And people should actually be using that. You know, I'm still amazed that governments are so non-present or only a little bit present, you know. They should embrace this. These are the people that can look 20 years ahead understand what is coming, what consequences of certain actions will be, and are totally aware, basically. So yeah, use it.
Use it or lose it.
Yeah, well, that's also kind of cool about this community. They don't step aside.
Yeah.
You know, they will let people know that they are there. They will take responsibility.
You know, I think there's a certain sense of this mixture of sort of conviviality, playfulness, and courageousness that I see here, all kind of mixed all at once. It's like people are very a kind of mix of courageousness and paranoia in equal degrees. That people are so used to working in the dark, in the underground, you know, that the work they're doing is not legal or they are not necessarily illegal, but something they don't really want to share publicly, that there's a sense of hesitation about talking.
But you have to imagine that these people, even if you're doing legal things, I still believe that what I did was legal.
Yeah.
But the misery you get from such a case, and the stress, and the fact that I'm not able to do my job as I used to be able to do my job before, that altogether makes it a big risk, for instance, to expose flaws or to expose leaks. Last week, I had this Belgian website. They were highly undersecured, and a hacker got access to a list of famous people in the Netherlands and Belgium. I published about it. The company hardly responded. I warned them several times, like, fix your site, take your site offline. They only started to do that later. Now they have taken measures finally, and now I found out that they have pressed charges, hoping to find the hacker, and the hacker did not release the data.
He just found the holes in their security system.
Yes, and of course, to make the point, I showed on television a couple of the names that are on those lists, but we didn't share any password information that was there as well, phone information, private addresses. It was all there, and what you see is that we have got a system created of people not taking their responsibility in so many ways. I think a nice sentence to end for and to break for some music and then take on to the final part, I guess.
Thank you.
And we're back at 92.6 FM. My name is Brenno de Winter. This is the news roundup. And it's kind of a funny feeling when an entire camera crew is standing over the microphones that we are already talking into and trying to shoot while we are making radio. But I'm still being interrogated by Judith. And last things were basically about press freedom in general and the need.
Yeah, we were talking you about the chilling effect of being investigated or being accused and how that affects your work as a journalist and how that how your particular legal situation has changed your feeling about your work.
Yeah, I don't feel that I'm at liberty to do my work. And that sounds a little bit dramatic, but picture this. First off, there is no discussion about the facts. I did travel on the cards. I did alter them. It was on all television stations in the Netherlands. Everybody could has seen that. There's no discussion on that. So proving that is not really the issue. I've also admitted that during the interrogation, of course, because it's a relevant part of the case. But the other thing is just as apparent. This is for a journalistic reason. Parliament had an emergency session and they interrupted the debate on Afghanistan for my scoop. That is really exceptional. And then they postponed the introduction. So the journalists... So I expected to go to the police. They would close the file and the public prosecutor decide either to prosecute or not to prosecute. And then something funny happened. He went on a holiday and left nobody to watch the file. So for 3 weeks, you'll remain in limbo. Mm. And then they said, like, we have started the second investigation into you. So I asked, like, what is this about? Or my lawyer asked that. They didn't give an answer. They wouldn't tell us. So now they've rounded it all up and the file is ready. And still, that has now been like 2 or 3 weeks. And still they haven't made up their mind whether or not to prosecute. And that is the constant threat of if I say this and this and this about what I did, might that just shift the balance from not prosecuting to prosecuting? So you start to self-censor yourself. Mm-hmm. That's scary. Mm-hmm. You know, that I can't write what I want to write. I'm not really at liberty to do basically do my work. And one of the funny things was at a certain point the district attorney got annoyed by my lawyer sending every so many days a letter like we really would like you to take a decision now. And he wrote back, well, your client is at liberty to do whatever he wants to do as long as he's not breaking the law. So I asked if I was allowed to buy a certain cell phone that can alter these little cards. Everybody in the world can buy that cell phone. I can't. So you're not at liberty. And that is the choking effect. You know, you're always scared to write about this case. I investigated this card for 4 consecutive years. And now I'm the one missing out on all the scoops.
So we've been joined by Birgitte Jonsdottir. And maybe I'll put you in my seat. Or, yeah. Or,
that's
let me. I'm going to.
Okay. I guess Judith is kind of in a rush, or? Okay. Hey, Birgitte.
Hi.
I was just being interrogated by Judith.
Oh, about, that's good. She's a good interrogator.
Yeah. She hasn't tortured me yet, so that's...
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Yeah, I was talking about the chilling effect of having a case ongoing and yeah. Not knowing what's going to happen and not feeling free to write, even though that the district attorney says you can.
Yeah, I mean, it must be, and you have certainly had your experiences with being blocked from writing stories. And I think that's sort of the heart of the big problem that we're dealing with when it comes to freedom of information, because it's for sure not free, not even in the so-called liberalized democratic countries.
That, yes. Yeah, you've been to the Netherlands.
I have been to the
Netherlands. How did you like the ministers over there? Let's shift the focus a little bit.
Are you talking about your interior minister?
Yeah, Mr. Donner. Interesting.
I was actually very surprised that the person that was delivering the speech on the free press day was telling the media that they shouldn't have all these freedoms. And actually, I thought that there was some sort of comedian coming in there to, you know, make us crack up, but everybody ended up clapping for him, which was even more shocking. All the journalists. Now I think apparently from what I heard is that this ministry is sort of something that you can inherit.
Well, officially not, but yeah, the Donner family has been Minister of the Interior or Minister of the Justice Department for many times, and that they're old Christian Democrats.
And so
you can't officially inherit it. It's something that you know, the party has to look and then say like, "Okay, this would be a good guy or girl."
Mm.
But the reality is that the Donner family has delivered several ministers of justice, and he's been a minister. Yeah,
I mean, it's just so fascinating. I thought this could only happen in banana republics.
Yeah, I'm now doubting what I should say because I think, given free speech, I think we are hard on on the highway to becoming a banana republic.
Yeah.
And it's not only the Netherlands. You see it happening in Italy. You see it happening in Russia. And the only difference is that at this point in time, journalists are not being shot by the government or killed.
Just character assassinated.
Well, that is actually what does happen.
Yeah. I mean, and that's a big problem because if you are stopped either by character assassination or an ordinary assassination, it means that the truth will not get out, which is a huge problem in our Western world, because exposing the big corporations at an era where there is an increase in privatization and at an era where we have become aware of that indeed there is a perfect marriage between the corporate and the state, and according to Mussolini, that was his definition of fascism. I wonder whatever happened to our democracies, and I think it's critical that we give the people back the inspiration and the power to be more active in the society. But you can't do that if you don't have freedom of information.
Absolutely true. Absolutely. Couldn't agree more, of course. Yeah, and the problem indeed is that we see that this failing. I already explained on the Freedom of Information Act in the Netherlands and how it's not functioning as it should function mm-hmm. in a free society. But I'm also making a documentary myself where the basic concept is a FOP zone, a freedom of press zone. And it has basically two characteristics. By law, you are allowed to film at such a place, but in practice, you will be hindered in such a way that you can't do your job.
Right.
And I've created a whole bunch of FOP zones already. Walk into a city hall, like the one spectacular was The Hague. In The Hague, we walked in, and within 40 seconds, there was all of a sudden a security guard trying to hinder us. So I said like, well, sorry, but this is publicly accessible and this is government ground, so I'm allowed to do my job here.
Mm-hmm.
And then they started hitting the camera of my cameraman. Took parts of my intern. She was squeezed by a security guard, and then they called the police on us. And the police, realizing that they were out of line, were only worried about how can we, you know, deal with it without being, you know, a problem ourselves. And the security guards got away with it, and when I called the city of The Hague on it, the response of the press spokesperson was that we should have asked for permission to film. So I asked like, what happens if there is a disaster, a shooting or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
And he went like, well, you have to call me first.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that ain't gonna fly.
No, but you know, I think this is a situation that we're experiencing, and increasingly also just with, you know, if you want to go like there is this new house that's been built in Iceland, a music house, very expensive, and taxpayers had to basically cough up the money because the guy responsible to doing it was, you know, Mr. Isaf, and and he sort of ran away, but he was still at the opening, you know, he started it, and then the nation had to pay half of it. But they have implemented new rules, so nobody can actually bring any sorts of cameras into this house that indeed is really the nation's house. There are all these restrictions everywhere. And
how can this be after all Iceland went through and the mindset that was so shifted? How can this be?
I don't know. I think people just become lazy and they become tired if they don't see instant results. We are so used to instant results. If you don't see them immediately, they just give up and start watching their favorite TV shows again, I guess.
I guess that's what happens a lot. Xopper, can you turn on some music, please? And we're back, and I'm still looking at her, Birgitta.
And he actually played my favorite song. You should all listen to the lyrics to this song. Inaction is a weapon of mass destruction.
Yes, I'm always working with devices of math instruction. that's a whole different game. You're listening to Binary Voice 92.6 FM on your decked phone 1926. And we've been talking this entire hour about basically press freedom and how hard it is. One of the things maybe we should discuss a little bit is not only the whistleblowing type of thing, but also the libel. Because that's something that scares me as well a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Libel. And
how is it in Holland? How would it affect your work?
Well, when I was informed that I was a suspect, you need a lawyer. Mm-hmm. And the first thing she does is explain to you how much she costs an hour. And wow. her hourly rate comes very close to my daily rate.
Oh, God.
And there's a lot of threat. And for me, as a self-employed person, that's highly threatening. The society stepped up for me, and the Association of Journalists or the Federation of Journalists steps up for me. So they will pick up the tab. But if you know... If you get a claim, that's harder. In the Netherlands, it's not that easy to claim, but it does happen. You know, we have this guy that actually made a foundation to sue journalists.
Really?
Yeah. And then he tries to sell it as a good thing, shutting people up.
How? What's his argument?
Well, that journalists are writing things that are not true, blah, 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 which in certain cases that is true, but, you know, make it... There's this fine line between, you know, correcting journalism where people are really, you know, out of line, mm-hmm. and the other side of being silenced because you need to bring a story. Now, the company behind this transportation card, they have unlimited money because the society is paying.
Yeah.
I don't. So, yeah, if they start to sue you, that's very dangerous.
Yeah. Well, and I think this is sort of the UK model. I mean, I think the UK... has actually progressed the furthest with it without people really knowing it. And then, of course, you have dirty journalism, like, you know, with this, with the Murdoch newspaper that they eventually just decided to sacrifice. But the danger is that they will use that as an example to even make it harder for real journalists to write real stories.
Yes.
And one of the most troubling things when it comes to... the situation for investigative journalists is all these out-of-court settlements because the media outlets, they can't afford the court cases because they basically just drain them. And then there are out-of-court settlements where you will never be able to publish the story that you've been working on. Yeah. And I find that to be absolutely incredibly troubling because those companies that can afford to take down huge news corporations, they have something... that we are entitled to know. It's a lot of corruption and illegal activities that they get away with because they're too big.
Yeah. There's this one thing that I would love to see in IMI is that any of that hindering or any basically European Constitution of Human Rights, Article 10 hindering, should be a crime,
mm-hmm.
and be dealt with as a crime. Because then you've got equality of arms, and that means that, for instance, if I'm not being prosecuted, that I can criminally charge the company that filed the complaint in the first place.
Mm-hmm. So sort of a slap like they have in California?
Yes, or, yeah. Well, that's definitely something that I would love to see in there. And
I think we have included it. I think so.
Well, we thought about it and we discussed it, but there's our camera crew again, and we've discussed it, but it is still worrisome, you know.
Yeah, it is, and I think that's yet another thing that needs to be constantly upgraded, because the thing is that it doesn't matter what, you know, how good laws you make, those that want to stop us telling the truth.
Bless you.
Got a flu. They are quicker than us.
Yes.
So we always have to try to be one step ahead of them.
Yes, and anti-slap, that's actually a California law that basically responds in a similar way to somebody attacking or bringing frivolous claims, what happened in California a lot, of course. That really helps. But now you see the hardening, you see journalism becoming more sleazy.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other hand, you see the hardening of governments closing up and corporations starting to sue all around them, and especially in the UK, as you said, that is extreme.
It's very difficult to deal with the judges as well, because they are sort of their own authority. So even if you have really good laws, like in Iceland, the judges have really, actually, as we get better laws for freedom of information, they are really stepping up on persecuting journalists, which is very troubling to me.
Prosecuting journalists?
Yeah, for, you know, telling stories. You know, if somebody goes, you know, brings a court case in where they feel that a journalist has written a story that's, you know, falls under the Privacy Act, they have a very easy time going after journalists, compared to it should be the reverse. So it's just a new trend, just been happening in the last few months.
Yeah, in the Netherlands we have one positive trend, and there's this shock blog called Geen Stijl. They're the most popular weblog in the Netherlands. And they basically hate everybody, and they write like this. So they take aim at everybody. If you do something stupid, they take aim at it. Mm. And that now is something that is pushing. Sometimes I think they're out of line, mm-hmm. but the good thing is that you are pushing the boundaries again. You know, you're pushing back and trying to prevent that people.
It's so important to have people like that act like activists, because they always push the boundaries. So you have to rethink your boundaries once they pushed it. So that's great. What's the name of them again?
Geen Stijl. And I'll send you the link.
Yes, thank you.
And you love you always love the words with
absolutely. A good exercise.
Hey, Birgitta. It's top of the hour. You have to do another interview. I would love to fill 2 hours with you. And unfortunately, we can't. Thank you so much for being here. Mm-hmm. And also Judith, who's still standing there. Thank you for interviewing me, talking to me about the things that are happening with IMI. For the next hour, we have got different things coming up. For instance, what are we sending into space?
Ooh.